Welcome to Hutch on Hunting. This is Bruce Hutchin, your host for this podcast. I'm the CEO of Hutch on Hunting Research and Information. I'm a digital scouter. And at hutchonhunting.com, you will see all my offerings and how I cover the state of Colorado for all big game species. Please reach out to me at hutchonhunting@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link to set up a free discovery call where we'll talk about what you're looking for and how I can help you. hutchonhunting.com brings you the finest Colorado-specific research tools for your upcoming hunt. Welcome to an episode of Hutch on Hunting. This is your host, Bruce Hutchin, and we're going to stay what my theme's been for last few weeks about the fatherless. And I'm pleased to have Eric Swithin on, and he's the creator. He produced a movie called The Fatherless Academic. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's my opportunity to get this out to North America. My podcast is heard throughout the United States. And I want men to realize that they need to cowboy up, as we say in Colorado, give up a few hours, but it's really not giving up. It's investing a few hours in the life of other men. And I'm preaching to the choir right now. So let's go back. And how did Eric get to where he is today?
Well, the truth is, and you'll hear this in our film, The Fatherless Epidemic, but I say this frequently, I should be dead or in prison. And that's the truth. I grew up in a broken home, and dad wasn't around much. When he was, it wasn't necessarily a good thing. But man, I found myself suffering from just about every kind of abuse you can imagine growing up. And when I moved into my teenage years, man, I was a mess. And on the inside, obviously, I was a scared kid, insecure, had no understanding of how to relate to people, pretty beat up from trauma I had endured. But on the outside, I came across as this arrogant kid that was always seeking attention, always getting in trouble. And if there was trouble, I found it. And so by the age of 17, I had been brutally stabbed and almost murdered in a gang fight. I had been in jail. I was living on the streets. I was addicted to drugs and alcohol already at that point. And so just a really, really rough kid seeking validation, seeking purpose, seeking attention in all the wrong ways. And part of that was just really bad decision making. And a huge part of that was I was a product of the fatherless epidemic and what it produces. And so when I turned 18 years old, I'd already enlisted in the United States Marine Corps. I was just on the delayed entry program waiting to go to boot camp. And during that time, I met God. Actually, I was in the process of taking my life. And in one last ditch effort, I cried out to God, if you're real, if you exist, if you truly exist, show me. If I have any purpose, if I have any meaning, if there is any meaning, if you have any love for me, if you exist, show me who you are. And he did. He showed me exactly who he is. I experienced God firsthand and immediately gave my life to him. He revealed himself as Jesus Christ and offered me an opportunity to be reconciled to God through what he did on the cross. I had no religious upbringing. So when I prayed to God, I prayed to whoever you are, whether you're Muhammad or Jesus or whatever, I was open to whatever God showed me. And so from that day forward, I was on a upward trend of just trying to seek God and what his purpose was for my life. If you fast forward just a little bit, I ended up going to the Iraq War, which left me absolutely broken when I returned. Being on the front lines, we took 17 cities and saw unspeakable horrors of innocent women and children that were caught in the crossfire and just the gore of battle. And I didn't know how to cope with that. And so that sent me spiraling out of control and reverting to all my old coping mechanisms. Instead of running to my Heavenly Father and jumping in his lap, I did exactly what Adam and Eve did in Genesis 3. I ran and hid and covered my nakedness. And eventually I found him again because he revealed himself to me again. And so fast forward even further, I ended up going into the business world and was yanked out of that miraculously and plunged into ministry to the fatherless. Because when I started serving in the inner city just as a part-time mentor, I saw myself in those kids. Like I could hang out with these young men that were destined for an early death or destined for prison or to just repeat the cycle of generational curse that was passed down from their grandfather to their father to them and so forth. And I could just see myself in these kids. And so that's where it started over a decade ago, pouring into kids in the inner city. And we ended up starting our own thing and felt called to do so. And here we are today. We've put out a movie called The Fatherless Epidemic, fatherlessepidemic.com. And now we have a national ministry called The Alliance, which seeks to end the fatherless epidemic by collaborating with churches and ministries around the country to pour into the fatherless.
So when you think about your growth, what's the major hindrance right now for reaching the fatherless in the United States?
The biggest hindrance is this. A lot of people were very quick to talk about the government, 1964, the Great Society, Lyndon B. Johnson. He shoved this war on poverty down everybody's throat by creating a welfare system that incentivized fatherlessness, right? So he told women that if they would marry a man that has a job that pays, that they will lose their welfare benefits. This particularly devastated the Black community, but it really incentivized fatherlessness and waged war against marriage and traditional nuclear family in general. So we tend to gravitate towards that and blaming that, but this is what people forget. Fatherlessness has increased 1700% since 1959. So we know that that political aim was a huge factor. But simultaneously, when that was taking place, the American church began to relinquish control of their God-given duties. And if you remember, it's the Christian church that started the hospitals, the colleges, the orphanages. In fact, a vast majority of the world's philanthropy is done by the Christian church. Well, in the 60s, the government and their welfare system and their overreach began to grab at all these things, and the church just relinquished control of pouring into the fatherless, pouring into the orphan, which is the great mandate of James 1:27 in the Bible, that church done right is pouring into the orphan and the widow, taking care of them in their distress. So that's what we had. We have a twofold
Say that
problem.
over again, because a lot of people who go to church, they don't understand, in my opinion, IMO, that's the greatest precept out of the Bible, because we are ordained to serve the widows and the fatherless. If you're not doing that, and if you disagree with what I'm saying, just turn off your phone, turn off your earbuds, that's fine. But if you're not doing that, and your church isn't doing that, and something's wrong.
Yeah, we are saved by grace alone. It's not Jesus on the cross plus I do X, Y, and Z and I'm saved. That's not how this works. There is nothing we can do to earn our way into heaven. We cannot earn God's good graces by being good people. That's not how it works. It's 100% Jesus. But when you give your life to Jesus and he deposits his spirit inside of you, and your spirit is reborn in that moment, then we receive the heart of the Father, Father God. And the heart of Father God is for the least, the last, and the lost. And if you don't take it seriously, you have to begin to question your salvation and say, well, why don't I have a burden for helping the lost? If you look at Matthew chapter 25, verses 31, moving on down, the sheep and the goats. In the last days, God will separate the sheep from the goats. Those that just gave lip service to God and said, oh, I'm saved because I prayed some prayer at one point, versus those who prayed the prayer but really meaned it, not just intellectually, but they meaned it in their heart. They made Jesus their Lord. And with that, they adopted the Father's heart for the broken and they began to serve and to do whatever they can to make a difference in the world. I can go on and on. The talents buried in the sand versus talents that produce an eternal dividend. Well, we have what we call the great mandate. It's in James chapter 1, verse 27. It says, pure and undefiled religion is that which takes care of the orphan and the widow, or visits them in their distress and remains undefiled by the world. So in this verse, this single verse, it's marrying two things: taking care of those that are destitute and being undefiled by the world, being pure. And both of them are coupled together with, this is how church is done right. And so it is our God-given, ordained mandate, not a suggestion, that we take care of those that don't have a dad. It's our God-given mandate, and it's not a suggestion. And so that's what we have found. I think that the biggest, by far, the biggest hurdle we have in this country and getting this country back to where it should be is the church is asleep at the wheel. They check the box and go to church on Sunday, and they may pray sometimes or read the Bible occasionally. The church is not radically serving. They're not in the streets rolling up their sleeves. So we have daddies, and I'll even narrow it down one step further. Dads are not actually being dads. We need godly fathers that would step up and be godly dads to their kids. And then in turn, also scoop up those young men that are without a father, that are either over the railroad tracks, or maybe you notice them at your kid's baseball game because their dad never shows up because they don't have a dad. And I think that is the key. In fact, we have a faithful fatherhood course that's being released on Father's Day, and you can sign up and pre-register at fatherlessepidemic.com. It's on the homepage. Just click pre-register and put in your email, and you'll be good. But we want to teach dads how to be godly fathers and how to also adopt the mission of discipling and pouring into those that don't have a dad. You want to change a society, that's how you do it.
What's the total number of fatherless young men in the country today?
There are some varying statistics. On the low end, 18 million, all the way up to 25 million. But that's kind of a farce because we have a greater statistic when you include the kids that do not have an emotionally present dad in the home. That number is far greater. In fact, that's somewhere in the high 50s, low 60s percentile. So what I'd like to say is about 60% of kids right now being raised under the age of 18 do not have a loving father in the home that's present and pouring into them and teaching them what it looks like to be a functioning member of society and a good person. Now, if you take the next statistic, well, how many of those 40% that are present in some way are actually teaching these kids how to love Jesus and actually discipling their kids? That number is very small.
Less than
So,
10%.
yeah.
And that's shameful that I even have to say that, folks, because 50 million kids, young men, are growing up that may be required to defend the country, defend their home, be the leader in the homes, be the leader in their schools, their companies, and be leaders. And there's a gazillion billions of dollars made on leadership development and so forth and so on. But the best leadership precepts teaching is from the Holy Bible. That hasn't changed. If you have an issue, get in your Bible, open it up, and you will find an answer. You might not agree with it, you might not like it, but there it is. Just like we talked about James 1:27, the pure religion, that's it. And I have issues with religion because they are not teaching that. In my opinion, religion in the United States had failed the sheep, no question about it, have failed it. And so if we can get all these groups, number of groups that are working to change the course of young men's life, then you'll grow up leaders that know who their Heavenly Father is, who Jesus is, and the Holy Spirit is. And they won't stand idle. They will say no. They'll raise their voice and say no. That isn't right. Thoughts, comments?
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I think we foundationally have to start with, do we agree that one of the absolute greatest issues in our country right now, it's the roots of the majority of our societal ills, is fatherlessness? That's the first thing. Do we agree on that? when you look at all of the different statistics, right? And you look at numbers and data in general, you have to come to that conclusion. That's the first step. For example, $80.7 billion were spent last year on prison expenditures. That doesn't count the court costs. That doesn't count the first responders. So crime in general is absolutely one of the factors that is bankrupting our country. And then when you look at 85% of those in prison come from a fatherless home, you begin to see the problem. If you look at crime in general, young men that are from a fatherless home are 279% more likely to illegally carry a gun and deal drugs. Girls that come from a fatherless home are 900% more likely to be victims of sexual violence. And boys that come from a fatherless home are 14 times more likely to be rapists. 71% of school dropouts, 75% of youth in chemical abuse centers from fatherless homes. If you look at behavioral disorders, if you look at suicide, if you look at those who are more likely to get an abortion, if you look at the economic, the emotional, the medical, the educational, you start taking every segment of society that we're dealing with, and you look at fatherlessness in light of all of those different segments and say, how does fatherlessness impact those areas? It is absolutely clear that our society is being devastated because of it. If you have broken homes, you have broken communities, and this country is comprised of communities. If you have healthy homes, you have healthy communities. Then you have a healthy country. So if we could first agree on that, that is key. And then the second thing is, all right, so what do we do about it? I mean, I think a lot of people will agree that fatherlessness is the biggest issue, but they have all of these things. I want to fix it this way. I want to fix it that way. There is no solution apart from Jesus Christ. You cannot change people from the inside out just by running some mentorship program that teaches them how to make fire by whittling sticks together. You have got to teach them about what it means to be a man. Whatever we believe, our theology, our belief system at the core of who we are informs us about our behavior and how we'll act and what we'll do. So the first thing is, well, what does it mean to be a man? And as I mentioned the other day on the Eric Metaxas show, I said, why do you think we have so many 40-year-olds that are in a basement at their mom's house playing video games and living off the system? We don't know in our country anymore what it means to be a man. So in our ministry, we have what we call the sevens. How do you talk to God and hear his voice? How do you read the Bible? Integrity, purity, work ethic, selflessness, and chivalry. Those are our sevens. That's what it means to be a man of God. There are many other things, to be a provider, to be a protector. But ultimately, if we would help young men understand what it means to be a godly man, and we would introduce them to Christ so they could be transformed from the inside out, one generation later, what you have is more men who have successful marriages, who raise their kids in a beautiful, God-centered way. Three generations later, you could literally flip the script and turn this whole thing around. So right now, the airplane is falling out of the sky. It's doing 800 miles an hour, zooming towards Earth, gonna hit the ground and crash. I believe this country is at the precipice of its ultimate destruction. We're almost to the point of no return. But I do believe that if we would teach this generation of young men what it means to be godly men, to rise up and to break the generational curse, to get off the welfare system, to pursue the purpose God has for their life, to have a family and raise that family the way the Bible teaches us to, I believe we could take back this country. I do not believe that we take back this country merely by voting for the right people. That is the church saying, I got too much going on. I'm just going to put this in the hands of some leaders and let them do it. When has the government ever been the solution to any of our problems in the
Never.
history of the world, ever?
Never.
No, it is God. He is our solution and nothing else. It can only be him. He's the only hope we have. That's it.
And so I'm sure I have not seen your movie, but I will watch your movie. You bring all this up in your movie. Am I correct or am I off target on that?
Yeah, for sure. It's an interesting movie. It has this meta narrative of my father and my relationship as we reconciled and became really close friends. He's diagnosed with terminal cancer and ends up passing away. I got to walk with him through that. So it shows the beauty of forgiveness and reconciliation, but it also has all these really cool stories of young men that we pour into who are breaking the generational curse, as we just mentioned. And we're proving this concept to be true. In fact, we were talking before we went on air here and started recording about one of my sons, Will. I've been pouring into Will for about 7 years. He came through our program, and him and I just have bonded tremendously. He calls me dad. I call him son. I performed his wedding ceremony. He just ran a 500-mile foot race through the woods. He's qualified to be a Green Beret special operator. He's a specimen, college graduate, played rugby at Arkansas State, and he loves Jesus. And he's married to the most amazing woman ever, who's a labor and delivery nurse here in Alabama. Her name is Kim. He has this beautiful home, a home of peace, a wonderful marriage. He's going to be an incredible dad. She's going to be an incredible mom. And if you knew where they came from, him and his brother, it's just profound. It's utterly miraculous. And so we have stories like that woven throughout the film, and kind of an inside look on what a successful fatherless ministry could look like. And one thing we wanted to convey was how fun it is, right? So, when you mentor a young man, it's like, oh man, what a drudge. I got to mentor a young man. No, it's the coolest thing you'll ever do. First of all, my children, my biological children, ages almost 5 and 7.5, they have all these brothers that we pour into that don't look like them. Some of them are black and some of them are brown. We have, just a beautiful variety of ethnicities in our family because of the boys we've adopted through our program. And so our kids get to see us model the hands and feet of Jesus and be missional. And our kids are like, wow. This is how it's done. So when they go to college, and if they choose to go to college, if God calls them to college, and they see all these social justice missions that are just 99% of them are just absolute imposters in terms of justice and what God calls justice, they're gonna be like, oh, that's not the real thing. My daddy, he showed me the real thing when we were in our house with him. He modeled what justice looks like and taking care of the orphan. And so you get to see, your kids raised in a home where mission is just ingrained in our DNA. We get to serve on a regular basis. And then we have these amazing young men as a part of our family. It just enriches our lives. And on top of that, God redeems our hobbies. The show's about hunting as well, right?
Yes,
Recently,
it
on
is.
Facebook, this cool story. So, young man, I've tried to pour into for 7.5 years. Never could crack the code on this kid, man. He just was he had 8-foot-thick lead walls around his heart. He just would never let you in. Not a lick of emotion expressed by this kid. He just wouldn't let you in. And we tried a lot of different things. And so finally, like, all right, let me take this kid hunting. So a buddy of mine let us go out and sit in some of his shoot houses here in Alabama. And it's early morning. This kid's never even shot a rifle. We didn't have time to sight in a rifle or anything. And so he uses my buddy's 7mm Magnum with this,
Oh
like,
no!
it's a 14 time scope. I mean, this thing is a very long distance scope for like 400 yard shots. But he's got this thing zoomed, magnified 14 times. It's a 7mm Magnum. It's a big, big round. And so we're sitting in this shoot house, and boom, there pops up this doe about 125 yards away, which fills up the scope. It's a 14 magnified scope. It's a huge scope. And so here this kid is that I've been pouring into for 7.5 years, and he's shaking. He's got the big buck shakes, even though it's a little doe. And he just can't get a stable position to shoot, and he finally pulls the shot, and nothing happens. I mean, he had literally 60 seconds, and we even squawked at the doe because it started to walk back in the woods, and it stopped, and we gave him more time. So he misses the shot. Later that evening, sun's going down. It's 35 mile an hour winds. I was like, man, I've never seen a good deer in winds like this before. I'm just setting you up. Like, I'm not so sure we'll see anything tonight with the wind like this. They usually bed down, because they can't smell their predators. They can't smell enemy because the wind is just swirling and doing wild things. Nope, God had other plans. We said a prayer in that blind, and 9 does come out at sunset, and he has another shot at 125. And we gave him some principles on what to learn from his last shot that he missed. So he takes a shot. He's more stable this time. He made a comment. He's like, "Man, this is nothing like a video game, like Call of Duty." He's like, "This is nothing like it." You know, we all laughed. Well, we didn't see anything, you know, after he took the shot. And so we get out of this blind and we walk up the hill. The hill kind of drops down the other side, and I see this little white tail on the ground, and he sees it too. And he jumps 4 feet in the air and just screams with excitement, more excitement than, you know, I can even articulate. And I jump up and I'm screaming. And then we hug and we just start screaming and punching each other. And like, just, I mean, we're beyond stoked. And he took his first deer and I got to be there with him. And the point of the story is that I had the time of my life. It was like the first time I got to shoot a deer myself. Because I got to live vicariously through this young man who got his first deer. Do you know how many first deers I've helped young men take? I lost count. I've had that experience so many times. It's one of my favorite experiences in life to see a young man take his first deer. It's incredible. And then guess what happened on the way home from that hunt as we brought the deer to a processor? He opened up. All those years of trying to pour into this kid, and you take him to get his first deer, and he cracked wide open about his struggles, his insecurities, his doubts, and his faith. It was the most fruitful conversation we had. And it was all because we sat in a deer blind together for a day and just had the time of our life and bonded. So that's a lot of what our film has to do with is calling men to action, showing them how life-giving it is, how fun it is, how God wants to redeem their hobbies and use their hobbies for his glory, and really the difference that it will make for generations to come. If men that hear this would just pick one young man that needs a father figure, just one,
Just one.
the difference it would make is tremendous. In fact, another statistic, if our churches would just adopt, if someone in the church, 21% of churches in America would adopt one child more per year, we would literally empty out the foster care system. It is not the government that is the solution. It's the church. It's God through the church. So the same thing is with the fatherless epidemic. If just a handful of men from just a fraction of the churches in this country, let's just say 25% of the churches in this country, if a handful of men in those churches would commit to pouring into one young man and helping raise him up in the ways of God and teaching them what it means to be a man, we would change the course of history, and we'd change the trajectory that this sinking ship is on.
We could do that in a decade.
I believe so. I believe the numbers would suggest that that is a true statement.
So you shared about outdoor adventures. We didn't speak specifically to it. So we get the Fatherless Epidemic. That's your movie. Now we have outdoor adventures that puts boys in a situation they've never been in. Last weekend, I took Notion, the young man I'm mentoring, trout fishing for the first time. And it was private water, so he's going to catch trout. There's no question about it. But it didn't matter to him because he's got a fly rod out, and the trout are rising in the brook stream, and he's just beside himself, and he has to learn how to do it. Then he hooks one, then it's fighting. I mean, and I'm sitting there just marveling, at this young man's opportunity at 13 years old to realize all the other crap in his life, what he's endured, stops right there on that river. It stops. And you can't replace that. That's priceless.
It is.
That's absolutely priceless. So talk to us about outdoor adventures now.
Yep. So we have a base camp, and it's in the Rocky Mountains, basically on the border of Colorado and New Mexico.
So down by Raton or
Chama.
Chama, New Mexico. Okay.
Yep. And it's called The Refuge. And on day one, when these young men come in, they come in from all over the country: Detroit, Michigan, Native American reservations, inner city Houston. inner city Dallas, you name it. We bring them in from all over the place. They're required to do some volunteer work before they come. They're required to help fundraise some of the fees for camp.
And it
And so
costs what? $2,000, $1,000? What's the fee?
for a mentor and a camper, it's $2,000. And
Okay.
we cover about 60% of it. They cover about 40% of it. And that's one of the other stipulations. We require that, let's say, from inner city Detroit, you come with six young men. You're required to have six mentors that are dedicated to pouring into them while we're there. But more importantly, when they go home after what they experience in the Rocky Mountains, we want them to be mentored and discipled on a regular basis. So right when they show up, we make them start digging a hole. They have no idea what they're doing. They have a shovel and they start digging a hole. And then we hand them an ammo can and we tell them to put their phones in the ammo can and bury them. So they start off the
Love
experience with no technology. And then we immediately move into a lot of we call their sacred fraternal traditions, where we put these young men through the toughest thing they'll ever go through, but also the best thing they'll ever go through. And 97% of these young men give their life to Jesus while they're at our camp.
How
And
long a time is it?
it's only about a week. Yep. We take them backpacking into the mountains. They have tons of challenges they've got to go through, lots and lots of time around the campfire, hearing testimony and hearing what it means to be a man and being challenged to think about life differently. And what we're trying to do is A, we're trying to introduce them to Jesus. And number two, we're trying to deeply bond them with their mentors. So we're not trying to be the heroes. We want the mentors to be the heroes. So those young men just begin to gravitate. We're setting up a scenario where the young men gravitate towards those mentors, and we want to accelerate that relationship by years. And we've gotten really good at doing that. That way, when they go home, that relationship is forged and it sticks. And then we want to initiate these young men into manhood through a rite of passage. And so they are tested brutally. Not everyone passes the test and becomes a man. They have the opportunity to come back the next year if they're respectful and honorable. We'll give them another chance. We've had that happen many times, but we don't just hand out trophies to just anybody. Like, if you're ready to be a man, we will set up the situation so that you know for the rest of your life on this date, you are a man. You know what it means to be a man, and for the rest of your life, you can live as one.
So
And so
what's your
that's how it's doing.
pass-fail? 80%?
I'd say around there, 80 to 90%. They're wanting it so badly, especially the return ministries, because they have young men that have gone back that have bought into the fraternity, the Wolf Pack. And so they start talking and they're just like, okay, everybody wants to be a part of it. And this isn't like the Boy Scouts. This is, hey, I want to be a part of that fraternity. What do I got to do? And we have an official pledge card that's handed to them. Like, if you want to be a part of this, this is what you have to do. And so they kind of know what they're getting into. Now they're jonesing for it, right? They want to be a part of it really badly. So we've got a pretty high success rate.
And if a kid just says, I'm bailing, I'm out, can they bail?
They can opt out in terms of, hey, I don't care if I graduate and I don't care if I become a man, so to speak. But when we're out in the middle of nowhere, there's nothing they can do about it. So they're stuck. And they're going to be so scared out of their mind. They're not leaving. They're certainly not in bear country and mountain lion country going to be wandering away, walking down the trail. We've had some crazy situations unfold out there. It can get, as we like to say, it can get Western out
Well,
there.
yeah. And there's real mountains. If you're not familiar with the country down near Chama and stuff, there's real mountains there. 11, 12,000 feet, deep timber canyons. A friend of mine used to manage a ranch down there anyway. And so I spent some time down in Chama. So there you go.
Yeah, but it's
Good for
mostly
you.
the San Juan Mountains. They're not leaving. They're stuck. So we got them right where we want them.
That's great. Now, how do you select guys to be the teachers, instructors? I'll just call them instructors for outdoor adventures. If there's
So,
somebody hearing, our voices and said, hey, I'd like to jump in on that. I've got some skills and I'd like to, be an instructor. How does that happen?
yeah, there's potential there, but most all of the guides, assistant guides, and interns are former graduates of our program. That's really our goal, is that the organization would be run by men that have come through the ranks. And so that's really one of our big goals. Now, on the other hand, if you're going, man, I want to get in on this, and I want to bring my own son. You know, for me, one of the most ideal situations, let's say, what is the most ideal group to come on a walkabout, which is what we call it. You want to go on a walkabout. Here's the most ideal group. It would be a group of 12, and you would have fathers bring their biological sons to be initiated into manhood, and also bring a young man that's fatherless that they're pouring into. If you'd have a group of dads, these are our best groups. When you have dads with their sons and their quote unquote adopted sons that come on this trip, that is by far the best arrangement we can imagine. If you're looking to run a trip like this, we do have some openings in the summertime, and we will facilitate that. Actually, I'm guiding the first trip of the year this year, and it's a father-son trip. And so that's a possibility. But in terms of being on staff, that kind of thing, it's one of those things where we're trying our hardest to take former graduates and elevate them into leadership and that kind of thing. Although I am looking for a camp director, someone that would run the whole operation, not this summer, but the coming summer.
So I'm thinking wall tents rather than cabins for your base camp.
Our base camp is an enormous lodge. It's
Okay.
a huge cabin that sleeps 25, has a game house attached to it, and it's a really cool property. But when we backpack, they're carrying about 40 pounds on their back, and they're going way out into the wilderness.
So you gear them up, show them how everything works, pack them up, and head them out.
And then go torture them. Yep. And they have a ton of fun. We play 9 innings of wiffle ball in the wilderness every day. We sometimes will summit peaks. They'll do a polar bear plunge. They'll have the time of their life. Sometimes they get to fish, depending on where they're hiking. We've from time to time we'll do pack trips with horses. There's a ton of amazing things. And keep in mind, a lot of these kids have never even seen a mountain before. They've never left the urban environment that they're coming from.
Right.
So you imagine, it's one thing like, okay, I'm going to go a couple hours away and see this new environment. Totally different thing when you go, 1,200 miles away to the mountains and the Rockies. And you should just see their eyes when they get out of the truck.
So if somebody's hearing this and saying, hey, that resonates with me, or I want to know more, how do they find out, Eric?
But there's a lot of opportunities. So just to blast all those opportunities, if you go to fatherlessepidemic.com, you can check out the film and use it as a tool for your ministry. There's also some free discussion guides on there to run a Bible study or to study personally. And as I mentioned before, you can pre-register for the Faithful Fatherhood course coming out on Father's Day right there on the page. So that's definitely a good place to go. If you want to join the alliance, you're thinking of, hey, I want my church to start a fatherless ministry. We're about to onboard the Free Methodist denomination. Lots and lots of churches across the nation are getting on board. What that looks like is, hey, if I have a men's ministry in my church and we want to dedicate at least one Saturday a month to mentoring young men, if that's of interest to you, you go to fatherlessepidemic.org, not .com, but .org. And you can apply for membership to be a part of what we're doing. If you're interested in the camp ministry stuff, whether being a part of it or you're wanting to duplicate it, you're wanting to create something similar to what we've created, we already have a creed, the Wolfpack Creed. It's what I personally live by. We have all the traditions, we know the legal side of things. We are happy to help people start their own gig or get involved with what we're already doing. You can go to outdooradventures.org and find out more about it.
Thank you for that. And since this is my second, fatherless show in a row, I just wonder how many people understand the seriousness about what we're talking about. I'm 78 years old, and served in the Coast Guard and went through that, had a great corporate career. I've had a good life. I've been able to hunt and fish across North America. I've had a great life. And I'm still pouring into people because or young men, because that's what I'm supposed to do. And you just go back to James 1:27. That's what it is. And if you're hearing my voice at the end, when I'm dead and I go up to heaven, The only words I want to hear is well done, faithful servant. That's it. You can't buy it. You can have all the money in the world, all the power, prestige, house. You can have all that. But that's the end game, folks. And the only way you're going to get that is to serve. Final thoughts?
Yeah, that's it. I always am asked the question, what else has God put on your heart? And it's always the same thing. And it comes from John 15, the first part of it. It's one of my all-time favorite passages in the whole Bible. And it's the passage on abiding, what it means to cling to God. That's what it means, that we are the branches. Jesus is the vine. The branches cling to the vine. The vine is attached to the tree. The Father waters the tree. He prunes the tree. He prunes the branches, and then it bears much fruit. Not a little fruit, not sometimes some fruit, but much fruit. And so, my encouragement to anybody that's listening is abide, seek Jesus. Get up early, open the Bible, and spend time with him. Journal, pray, seek his face, seek his will for your life. Ask him to fill you with his spirit and to guide your life and establish your steps. Surrender all of your ambitions, your agenda, all of the worldly things that we have so much focus and we put so much of our time and energy and attention on. Surrender all that. Lay that at his feet and say, God, you know me better than I know me. And real satisfaction comes from you. The abundant life, the best life, it can only come from you. Give me your heart to serve. Give me my purpose. And then from there, what you'll notice is God's heart begins to take over your own heart. And then from there, you go and serve. And I think we get that backwards. Like, if I go serve, then okay, fill in the blanks. No, I think if we really seek God with all of our heart, mind, strength, and soul, he begins to transform us. And then we go out in obedience and begin to serve. And I think that's where we can start. So my encouragement to everybody listening is seek the Lord while he may be found, because he is returning soon. And we want to be found by our master working. We want to know for sure that we're saved. We want to have that assurance that whether I die or he comes back, whatever comes first, we want to know that we know that we know that we know. We want to have the assurance that we're going to hear those words that Hutch said so clearly. When Jesus looks at us, he says, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." We do not want to hear the words, "Depart from me, I never knew you. You went to church, you performed
That
miracles,
doesn't matter.
you did all this stuff." It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't
And with
matter.
that, folks, this is Hutch on Hunting. And I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you have enjoyed this, let me know at hutchonhunting@gmail.com or reach out to me on my website, hutchonhunting.com. And think about what we talked today, because, men, it's time to cowboy up. This is Hutch saying, go out and make it a fantastic day.